MSCS Media, a great new media company. They're doing a wonderful job. I sat down for a long form interview with them, and they were nice enough to allow us to post it here. As always, you can email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. And I want to thank many of you that support us at charliekirk.com/supports. Teresa from Oklahoma, Doug from California, Brandy from California, Dennis from California, Maria from California, Jameson from California, Sandra from New Mexico, Ralph from Tennessee, Susan from Tennessee, Donna from South Dakota, and Lisa from Virginia. This is a long-form interview. It happened last month, so this was right before, I believe, the indictment of Donald Trump, so just keep that in mind. But a lot of the conversation is evergreen. I think you're going to really enjoy it. And thank you for supporting us and getting involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
All right, we got Charlie Kirk in, founder of Turning Point, the Charlie Kirk Show. You've done amazing things. I mean, by 28, you're on Fox News, business. I mean, everything that could be. Thank you for your
honor
time.
Honor to be here. Thank you.
I'm from Chicago, too.
That's right.
My friend, he's from Chicago as well, and he can't even take his son to his son likes to watch the trains go by. And he said he goes down there, and it's a very dangerous situation.
He's got to move. It's not the place I grew up in. Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. But still a great attachment to the city, and it's completely changed.
So obviously I got to ask you about this early, this Trump indictment thing.
Yeah.
Now, even if you're blue as can be or purple or green, you have piles and piles of things with Biden, Biden's kid, and you're going after Trump with Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's an unbelievably weak case, and we have yet to see kind of how it's going to play out, you know, as of we're talking right now. Trump is set to be arraigned in the next, you know, couple hours. So we're still talking a little, you know, speculatively. But no, this is an absolute outrage to the Constitution, to precedent. And the true crime that Donald Trump committed was winning the 2016 election. They had a party and a celebration planned at the Kravitz Center right there in New York. And he robbed them of that night. And, you know, there's a lot of psychological literature, I think, that could be instructive here. Because when you go through a traumatic event, it then defines you. And if you don't go through the healing process of a traumatic event, you can end up a very broken and bitter person seeking revenge at all times. And we've probably been around people like that a lot. Mm-hmm. There's kind of an archetype of kind of the scorned woman.
Yeah.
That's the entire Democrat Party in New York right now. The scorned woman who was robbed of the kind of seamless end of America that was supposed to be planned. Remember, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Amy Coney Barrett, those people are not supposed to be on the Supreme Court. Trump was not supposed to broker Mideast peace. He was not supposed to be able to have a middle class blue collar boom. So the fact that he robbed them of that evening is a traumatic defining event that leads directly to this indictment. Those two things are directly related. They might be 7 years apart, but that night when Hillary Clinton was humiliated, and the entire Democrat machine was humiliated. They basically swore a blood oath.
Didn't they have fireworks ready to go off?
They had like fireworks. Yeah. They had this like glass ceiling that was going to break. I don't think we understand how humiliating that was. And by the way, we played into it for good reason. The memes, the videos. I mean, we didn't just stick the knife in. We just
twisted.
And it was one of the great delights ever in American politics, right? Here you have this unbelievably craven, corrupt woman who should not be president, who's married to someone who's close with Epstein and has done other really nasty and awful
people
stuff.
People disappear.
Bimbo squad, all that stuff, right? Yeah, everyone commits suicide in their orbit. And she was supposed to be president, and they did not take Trump seriously at all. She didn't campaign, and it happened like that. And so this indictment, I think, hinges on the lack of healing of a very broken people from a traumatic event in 2016. There's other elements too, obviously,
right.
But I don't think we should forget that.
That makes a lot of sense with the trauma. Now, I can put that together. I see how that
we
that
call
would
it PTSD, which is kind of the catch-all term. I'm not a psychologist. You'd have to ask Jordan Peterson about that.
Right.
But just a general catch-all term of a traumatic event. We all know people who define their life based on a couple traumatic events.
Yeah.
And that is the New York Democrat Party.
And then furthermore, you go and you look at Biden and he gets 80 million more votes than any other president.
Well, not 80 million more, but 80 million votes. Yeah. I mean, I just don't believe it.
Right. Nobody in the right mind
believes
that.
But
so,
I mean,
this time they didn't. They made sure this time.
That's correct. Yeah. And they had to pull out every stop, right? They had to do all this nonsense in 2020. I think they're equally afraid they can't do that again in 24. I think they believe they can cheat and steal and harvest ballots and do all this nonsense. But 20 was a very unique kind of, we're going to go all in. We're going to use every favor. We're going to use every type of blackmail. We're going to go to Zuckerberg and $400 million and Center for Technology and Civic Life and all this different stuff. I think the consciousness of the American people has been raised since 2020. At least that's my great hope. There's plenty of counter arguments to that. And I think they're trying to take the player off the chessboard before votes are ever counted and or administered.
Now, obviously, he's going to take it to trial. Let's say he wins, which I think he should win. But, of course, it's in New York. They have so much money and so much power. And then even when it goes to 2024 and, but you know, he runs, blah, blah, blah. Even if he wins fair by the numbers.
Yes.
How is it going to be fair? They have so much money, so much power.
It won't be fair. And so, but despite that, it goes to show they're still worried that there's a sliver of a chance that Donald Trump could become president again. And so here's the operating hypothesis that I have. The presidency comes down to three states. So every 10 years, you reorganize the census. And because of that, the electoral map can change a little bit. Math can change a little bit. For example, Florida gains electoral votes, Texas, California, New York decrease. So the map is actually a little bit different than it was in 2020. So you no longer need to kind of win the 271 plus a seat in Omaha, Nebraska, or Maine. You can get to 270 electoral votes as a Republican by winning all the regular Republican states, plus Florida, which whoever the nominee is will win, plus Ohio, North Carolina, Iowa. So those four, I think, are pretty solid. And then all you have to do, and it's not all, but is win Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona. Those three states can and should go for the Republican nominee in 2024. So they're very worried, and they should be. And that's not, they're going to cheat. That is a guarantee. But if we have a banking collapse or a currency collapse, and if Republicans get smart about legal ballot chasing and I think ethical early voting, which we can talk about. I think that there's some room for improvement there, especially my home state of Arizona, where Carrie Lake should be governor, and they completely railroaded her and obliterated her campaign through a sabotage campaign from the Maricopa County Recorder's Office, amongst other things. What's happening in New York with the indictment of Trump is, yes, scorned trauma, but also pure 2024 politics. That they want to try to reduce any sort of probability that this man might become president.
They'll do anything.
And these are the defenders of democracy. Sorry, I have terrible allergies. No, that's okay.
We did this dog rescue thing this weekend, and that's why my throat's...
I'm not fighting a cold. But,
me neither.
Yeah, good.
I would let you know. So we got... Now, what we always try to figure out, when can't he run? Because we looked it up 100 times. Even if he's in jail, he can run.
Correct.
Technically,
yes.
Right?
So the only question, which is completely speculation. Well, no, that's not true. If he's indicted by the Department of Justice on a federal felony and he gets convicted by a jury, he cannot run.
Really?
So that's a separate issue, a federal crime. But this is now a state crime in New York. Now, even the DOJ one would be appealed up to the Supreme Court because it'd be the first time ever, right? But that's why the Jack Smith January 6th kind of wrinkle matters. What they're going to try to do, and they attempted to do this in California. This was the blueprint, Mark Elias and all these very evil people. Remember when California passed a law that said you must disclose your tax returns in order to get on the ballot?
Yeah.
So they're going to try to say if you are an indicted felon, you're not allowed to be on the primary ballot.
Hmm.
The Democrats are going to try to do that. It will probably fail in court. Now, you might say, well, who cares? Well, Trump would actually probably win the California primary, and you need to. Even the blue states matter in primary elections. And so the actual General election, they cannot prevent Donald Trump from being on the ballot. Why? Because the Constitution dictates very clearly what the criteria is to become president of the United States. 35, natural born U.S. citizen, right? Now, the federal crime and the felony thing, they're running out of time on that, where just a regular federal trial with someone that has money, they can string it out for a couple years.
Easily.
Right? Yeah. So they're running out of time. That's why Alvin Bragg had to force his hand. None of these things operate in its own little funnel, right? It's all in harmony. I don't know who the conductor of the orchestra is. I have my own speculation. Obama, Jarrett, Soros, all these people. But there is a conductor behind this. And so Alvin Bragg, who kind of fires the first shot, it was done so intentionally, in my personal opinion, to start a legal strategy, a lawfare strategy.
Thank you.
To obliterate the political chances of Donald Trump into 2024. So, yes, you're right. He could run from jail. He could run under indictment on state crimes. The federal crime is the big question. And so Georgia is the other one that they're going to try to go after him, which is one of the most – these cases are such garbage. They're garbage. Not only are they – you know, one of these silly people on TV says, well, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. That's not even the case here. It's show me the man, I'm going to make up the crime. This is not a crime. Having someone do a private contractual NDA when you run a business is not just legal. It is routine.
You have every rapper, every country singer. You have
every businessman, every CEO. Businessman not has... to mention Bill Clinton had a whole division of his operation called the Bimbo Squad. It was the actual working name of it.
Yeah.
Where he would go around and basically do hush money payments of NDA with every woman that he had sex with or that he, you know, cheated at. And his wife, that's not really a marriage. We all know that. It's just
roommate show off.
Yeah,
I guess,
whatever. Know, show. Whatever that is, yeah. Right? And so, yes, the Donald Trump is a major threat to the Uniparty and the regime. And so there's a speculation out there that, well, they want this because they think Trump is easier to beat. That could be true. That might be true. But that's actually not their top concern. Electability is part of it. The biggest concern is that he is the biggest threat if he gets to say, I solemnly swear. If he gets sworn in again.
Good night.
It'll make the first term look like a moderate Republican.
And we need it.
Oh, yes, we do.
And I'll tell you what, I've seen guys that, again, you know, I just want for what's best. And I think that's for anybody that has half a brain. But I've seen the hardest of hardest core Democrats say, I don't know about this time. I've seen the guy who cuts my hair. He's cutting my hair for 9 years. He's from Cuba. Last time it was, you know, Biden, Trump's too loud. Now he's like, please, Trump, please, we got to get him in. So I've seen a dramatic change. And then you have the schools, you know, which thank God you're done. Can you pull up a tab too?
That's my life's work.
Turning Point Academy. You know, tell everybody about that. I mean, this is needed more than anybody. We had Patrick McDavid in.
He's fabulous.
He's fabulous. What a class act he is. Yeah. And one thing he had said, and I know you would agree with, if you don't have money, find a way to make money.
Yes.
And make sure that your kid goes to a private school or homeschool.
Yes,
because
right.
The way you and I went to school is not what it is now.
No, I mean, I didn't go to college.
Yeah.
And I encourage people not to. I wrote a whole book on it.
Yeah,
Scam.
I can't wait to talk about that.
No, yeah.
I agree with you more than anything.
Thank
with
you.
That.
Well, that's very kind. And but yeah, Turning Point USA is our movement. And it's mostly students, but we also have stuff we do in churches and all sorts of stuff. We're the largest organization of its kind in the conservative movement. People can check it out at tpusa.com. We have Turning Point Academy, Turning Point High School, Turning Point College, our big events, which you might see pictures from, of thousands and thousands of students that attend. We have one coming up in Palm Beach in July. We'd love to have you attend.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So, look, our philosophy at Turning Point USA is we believe Western civilization is the greatest project in self-government, specifically America and the American Constitution and the promise of the American founding. We believe we've largely lost our way because we no longer teach our kids what it means to be an American. We want to live in a free society, but at Turning Point USA, we're very aggressive in the way we go about doing it. We're long-term thinkers with hyper-urgent immediate action. And so we have more high school chapters and college chapters. We're about to hit our 1,000th high school chapter, which is an amazing accomplishment. Thank you. We have hundreds of people on our full-time staff. I personally visit more college campuses than almost anybody else. Maybe Shapiro might have more than me because he's been doing it. You know, he's 10 years older than I am. But I visited well over 135 and spoke all across the country. I have a really good pulse on what is being taught and not being taught in the next generation. And everybody kind of has their place in the movement of where they want to make the biggest impact. My place is to try to make sure that this next generation understands the values we care about of a strong America, of a constitutional republic, of dialogue, of separation of powers, of why do borders matter? And then we get even to more fundamental questions of what is truth? You know, this trans stuff has just is a social contagion destroying the next generation. So we're kind of on the leading edge of that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. When you go in and you talk to, because you're doing high schools too.
High schools too,
yeah,
correct.
So when you go in and do you try to, you know, get to the curriculum more or like how do you go about it?
I mean, so we have Turning Point Academy, which is, they do a great job and people can check it out. It's turningpointacademy.com. It's all part of the family of products, family of projects we have is the word I'm looking
for. You've got a lot going on.
Yeah, we have a ton of divisions, school board watch list, professor watch list, all these daily shows. Jack Posobiec, Drew Hernandez, Alex Clark. You could see we have some of the biggest names in the conservative movement. Candace Owens with Blexit. Her project is now back part of Turning Point USA and God bless America. God bless Candace Owens for what she's done for America. So, yeah, look, what I'll say is this, is that it's a multidimensional fight. The curriculum is part of it, but our biggest focus is on the students themselves. We understand the institutions are not going to be saved easily. And so I'm less focused on trying to save the institution and more focused on trying to save the heart, mind, and soul of your kid and grandkid.
Sure. When did you notice the whole woke thing, which then turned into the BGLQA, however many letters they have now? If you haven't had Brandon Tatum, you got to have Brandon Tatum.
Oh, Brandon works with us. He lives with me in Phoenix.
Oh, does he? Yeah. Really? He was awesome. Yeah, he was one of our favorites ever.
He's a buddy.
He's a cool guy.
I'm a big Brandon Tatum believer.
And when did you see all this craziness happen? And then, of course, they throw in the racism on top of that.
That's
right. And, you know, we're sitting here with Brandon. Brandon's like, I think one time I've actually noticed racism.
Yes.
And this is from an African-American who played football, who was a cop. Okay. There's no reason to lie or BS. When did you see all the woke, all the racism, and now you have 3-4-year-old kids.
That's right.
Being asked about their sex, possibly getting a sex change, you know, when they're 10, 15, when they're 30 years old, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I saw a lot of the anti-Americanism stuff. This is about 11 years ago.
You did?
Yeah, I saw like 1619 Project type elements. It wasn't a thing yet. Definitely socialist type underpinnings. The woke thing is not new, but it has surfaced recently. Really? It's been around since the 60s or 70s. Marcuse, Jacques Derrida, Michel Foucault. These ideas really stem from a couple beliefs, which is you can never know truth in its objective and real form, that what is beautiful, good, and true that we call in the West is all just your opinion. What really all that matters is power dynamics, and tribalism is the ultimate way that we should organize society. I'm overly generalizing. It's a lot deeper than that. They actually make some things and some claims on society that are interesting if you have a fully developed philosophical and cogent worldview. It is absolute ideological arsenic if you feed this to young people without a classical base that understands how to think and process the world. And so the woke stuff, you know, I get asked all the time, Charlie, how do you define woke? Because that was trending on Twitter a couple weeks ago. A couple ways. The first of which is on the race thing, call everything racist till you control it. And so it's a means to power. That's what the woke is. It's not just about enlightening people or challenging pre-existing power structures. It's about taking over the power structures. Right? And so it is a means to tyranny. It's a means to an end of I'm in control and you are not. And that's why I always say the T in LGBT is for tyranny.
Yeah.
It's not for trans or whatever. It's for tyranny. Because, you know, the claim that the Alphabet Mafia makes is when I go to these college campuses, I always say, if you disagree, you can go to the front of the line. We can have dialogue and discourse and disagreement, and we can go from there. And I'll say, so the claim they'll always make is, Charlie, how does a man in his own living room, in his own private quarters, who wears a dress, impact you? And I say, other than a total affront on truth, it really doesn't impact me. But that's not why we're here. That's not why I'm passionate about this, because I wouldn't know about it. The issue is that that man who wears a dress wants me to reaccommodate and reconfigure all of society when he's not in his private quarters, but when he's in public. He wants me to change sports. He wants me to change curriculum. He wants me to change language. He wants me to change thought patterns. It is inherently tyrannical. If it was live and let live, no one would be talking about this. Okay? There's a lot of people with weird mental delusions that we don't have to reaccommodate society for. People that have imaginary friends, people that are schizophrenic. We get them help. We get them treatment. We compassionately care for them. And then we have decent and civil society. No, it's not live and let live. It's live and let them rule.
That's true.
That is true.
The T in LGBT is for tyranny. That's where this ends up. So the woke stuff, it went through three iterations, and I lived through all three. At least in this kind of modern moment. I got my start when the first attempt on the woke was Occupy Wall Street. And that was the radical fundamentalists, the radical left-wing fundamentalists that wanted to have an economic Marxist kind of movement. It failed. And this is exactly why Gramsci, in his letters from prison, written in the 1920s, early 1930s, came up with the term cultural Marxism, which Marcuse took and then brought it to America, which was the traditional Marxist dialectic. So it's coming from Hegel, Marx and Engels. They weren't wrong with a lot of what they wrote. It's garbage implemented, but effectively they were making a broader critique of capitalist industrial society, saying that if you forget labor completely, you're going to have an unsustainable civilization.
Yeah, you can see a foundation to what they were saying then.
Yeah,
but then it's like it got twisted and turned. And
yeah, but then they went, I mean, that's like chapter one. And then chapter two, three, four, five, six gets into total garbage, right? But
I got lost there.
Yeah, but the fundamental Marxist critique is, hey, you know, the bourgeoisie, right, if they are left unchecked, will not make a good world for the proletariat. And that labor matters. They think labor mattered more than capital. I disagree. I think they both need each other. You can have a prudent kind of middle ground, right? But everything they talked about was in economic terms, right? Marx and Engels, not cultural terms. But what they developed was a dialectic or a power struggle, if you will, or a framing of oppressed versus oppressor in economics. Fast forward to the 30s, 40s, and 50s, that same sort of framing was then taken. They said, well, why don't we take that kind of Marxist power struggle and then apply it to race? Or apply it to sex and gender. So we've lived through all three in a short period of time. And historians are going to look back and they're going to see, wow, those are the three attempts of the Marxists to take over the West. And most people didn't even realize it. Started with economics and it failed. Why? Because when the Marxists at Occupy Wall Street were saying, close down the banks and all this, I was actually sympathetic. I think a lot of those fraudsters should be in jail. But then they kept on talking and they're like, get rid of all private property. And like, okay, actually, most middle class workers enjoy the fact that they can get wealthier,
right,
and they want to try to get to a nicer life. And the American dream is admirable. So Occupy Wall Street failed. What was the second attempt? Me Too.
Me Too. Yeah. The Me Too movement.
Which was trying to turn women against men. This failed.
Yep.
It failed because they overly generalized, started with some legitimate complaints against some scumbags, right? Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby. And then, of course, since we're actually a rather decent country, there's a supply and demand problem for scumbag white people in part of society.
Yeah.
You just kind of run out.
They ran out.
And then you go to Louis C.K.
Yeah.
And okay, I don't know all the details, but he was way over penalized for whatever he did. I don't know if it was jokes or harassment.
It was jokes.
Yeah.
They did the usual where they just cut up like they did to Rogan.
Sure.
They did to Chappelle.
It's terrible. It's awful, right? And so then decent people say, okay, that goes too far. That's a tyrannical impulse behind Me Too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Kavanaugh thing was the absolute climax.
That was insane.
It was insane.
I saw that. I mean, how could you do that to that guy?
And it was the death of the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
So then they had to recalibrate.
They should have picked a better puppet to
Christine Balzé Ford and Michael Avenatti and Julie Swetnick. And you got all these people that are just flat out lying about Kavanaugh, right? And so the Me Too movement died. And it really hasn't come back, if you notice.
No, it hasn't. So, I haven't heard the Me Too movement.
Well, because
in 2 years.
Trans thing's at odds with the Me Too thing. That's why. But Soros and these radical fundamentalists seed funded
Soros
the beginning stages of the racial arsonist movement, using that power struggle, and they said, we're going to do black versus white. And it started in Ferguson, Missouri, spread to the University of Missouri, and BLM was born. And it was kind of a subterranean, below the surface movement for a couple years. And then 2020 happened. Lockdown the society, never should have done it. George Floyd occurs, and the entire society loses its mind. A new religion basically gets implemented, the religion of anti-racism, and largely driven by anxious, secular, miserable, upper-middle-class wine moms that do not have a grounded...
I always say that. I always say that.
It's true. Now, do you think it's working so well this time? Well, in my opinion, it's working so well this time because you have everybody addicted to that phone. So now they can, like, if you're not posting like you are, I am, or he is, you can be very easily brainwashed. Well, they are brainwashed on that phone. I mean, I say it all the time. When was the last time you stood next? If you have 100 people and you try to have a conversation with them, they're like this. They're feeling their phone. Yeah, sure. They can't wait to get on the TikTok and whatever else it is. Do you think that the reason why it's working so much better this time is because they're just getting that forced into their skulls at an angle?
It's a big part of it. But the biggest issue is white guilt. The reason the race thing works is because white people are the ones that are sponsoring it. This is not being driven by the black community. Go talk to an average black. They think, the police might be against them. There might be some racism. They laugh at reparations like free money. Sure. No. But the entire movement is driven by hyper-educated white liberals that do not know how to cope with being called a racist all the time. And so through almost a quasi-pagan religious exercise, they go through the BLM kind of the BLM movement and the BLM actions of, okay, you have original sin. They took this from Christianity, by the way. You have original sin because you're white, and you must pay a tithe because you're white, and you must relentlessly apologize because you're white. And the consequence of this is you have basically a race movement against white people that is being financed and mainly driven by white people.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then how does that connect to the whole trans thing? You're 4 years old. Hey, would you like to have your penis cut off? Would you like to have a penis? You know, like I have a 2.5-year-old daughter. I
have a daughter too. She's 7 months. Yeah. I mean, okay, so thank you. Yeah, look, and congratulations to you too. Fatherhood changes people. I encourage people to.
Do they mix somehow together with the racism?
They're actually at odds with one another, but they're happy partners in destroying the West because they both. At the core of the BLM movement is that you have an identity that matters that you can't change, and that's race. At the core of the trans movement is you have an identity that you can change,
right?
And that does matter. So that has never been actually hashed out or reconciled. But they're partners, and they're partners because – and this is called intersectionality. It's a term that is used a lot by Marxist revolutionaries. It's exactly how the Islamists are able to be partners with the Marxists. And Ilhan Omar, who's a devout Muslim, who's arguing for gay stuff in the Congress, even though the Islamic world – is far harsher towards the homosexual.
Far harsher. Remember they used to hang people?
They still do. They throw them off buildings. Or Ahmadinejad used to say in Iran, we do not have gay people in Iran. Like, not exactly welcome and opening.
And they don't because they throw them off the building.
Exactly right. And so, but intersectionality, the best way I could describe intersectionality is the enemy is so, we hate the enemy so much, we're willing to be partners with people we might disagree with to destroy the enemy. But the one thing that does unify the trans movement and the BLM movement is tribalism. Mm-hmm. And that is part of the one-dimensional man. He wrote in the book One-Dimensional Man, Herbert Marcuse, which is in this postmodern, post-structuralist world, that what matters is your group. The West was built on an idea that your group does not matter, that you as an individual are made in the image of God. You're made the image of the divine. You have a soul. You have agency. You have action. You are accountable for you. That's a profound idea. Most of civilization was that your group will take responsibility for the group action. The West said, no. Group matters. Accountability matters from the community. We're still going to have elements of that. But it's you that are going to have to be accountable if you murder somebody or you steal something. In tribal postmodern politics, they don't believe that. They believe that the white person must be accountable for all other white people. And the reason why the West has worked, the reason why we have all this wealth and all this prosperity and why we're the envy of the world, there's a lot of reasons, but largely is that we rejected tribalism. And so all throughout the first five books of Moses, we don't have to talk about too much religion if you don't want to, but basically our whole civilization is based on these ideas. The first five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, there's a constant refrain to love the stranger.
Keep that up, Rob.
To love the stranger and to reject always being in your tribal group, right? So it was this tension of God's chosen people of the Hebrews, the nation of Israel, but that you are not necessarily better than anybody else. You might be the messengers of the Lord, because people always want to just go back to sectarianism.
Right.
And the West has worked because we say, okay, I don't care about your sect. I care about your character and your action
leadership.
And your soul, your leadership. The left wants to destroy all of that. They want to return to sectarianism.
But what I never understand is, you know, as a society, right, especially the time period we're living in now, my wife is Puerto Rican. My kid's half Hispanic, half white. You look at all the intermixing of races and all that type of stuff. You know, where does this – from that side even, that's what they preach. They want this mixture that it's like – it's bad, or you know, you're filling out a form for college. You have to put Caucasian.
Yep.
They should just do away with that.
They should get rid of all of it.
What does my son put? Hispanic, because if he gets the
money, he's half oppressed.
Yeah. What do you do in that situation? How do you?
I mean, the question is, and I mean this seriously: do you want him to get an advantage or not? And so this is the question that mixed race families are now going to have to entertain.
Isn't that nuts?
And the answer is that there is now a currency. There is a way to get up in life if you check the box of the lineage that correlates with oppression, alleged oppression, versus oppressor. So I'm as waspy as it gets, right? White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. I'm like the whitest person you'll ever meet, okay? So, but your son or your daughter has, you know, white and Hispanic. What is fundamentally different between me and your kids? Nothing. We both have a soul. We both have agency.
Your heartbeats, right?
Right, exactly. And that's the promise of the Declaration, right? The Declaration of Independence, drawing on classical literature, all men created equal. It doesn't mean we have equal talents. Some people are shorter. Some people are taller. Some people are stronger. It's that we're the same type of thing. We are a human being. We're not the beasts. We're made in the image of the divine. And to your point of kind of the college selection, we've now made an incentive structure where you actually get a benefit from playing into this identity politics, which is why you have people faking being black. And this is how you know there's no white privilege, is that people want to stop being white.
Yeah.
How do you have white privilege if you get into college easier, or you want to check the box based on not being white? This is so damaging. I want to live in a country where race doesn't matter at all. At the same time, we must simultaneously admit these are white people that are doing this to the entire society.
Now, that's what's
that's
insane.
Crazy, yeah.
It's self-hatred, but it's self-mutilation. And so this is why, I mean, I'm a very proud Christian, and I'm happy to talk about it as much as you guys are comfortable. I'm not trying to proselytize. But when you get rid of Christianity as at least a default worldview, something stupid is going to take it in its place. So you might not believe that Jesus is the king of the world. You might not believe in everything in the Bible. That's fine. But you're being intellectually dishonest if you don't at least acknowledge that the world is better when Christianity is at least somewhat within the moral fiber.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I was raised Catholic, you know, as an Italian, like a nut, you know,
where I love Catholics.
Yeah, but you could go burn up a building and, I don't
confession,
know.
Confession. You got a confession.
It's all good. You walk out. Yeah. But, you know, it still gave you that grounding where, you know, whether you believe it, you don't believe it, it's still a good to have. It's
yes.
A good base to have, because you always have that thought in your mind, no matter what you think.
That's exactly right.
That's
a moral accountability, right?
Yeah.
It's the eyes of God are upon you at all times. That's a very good argument for the necessity of God. I'm talking more societally too, though. If you do not have some form of Christianity and or Judeo-Christian worldview, then something will take its place. There is no such thing as atheism. You might say, I believe in no God. Then you say, well, what do you believe then? You have to have some viewpoint. You have to have some ethical code. And I have an operating thesis that there's five fake religions that have then permeated the West. One of them is the religion of anti-racism, or the cult of diversity. So you get rid of Christianity, and then people start worshiping at the altar of BLM.
And I see how it all goes together. So You have your racism between colors.
Yep.
You have the racism between politics.
Yes.
Then you have the trans that just were wearing wigs and everything else or
pure
whatever.
Pure societal arson.
That are then going to a sex change, right? Then they move in together. So you have that group, that group, that
yes.
group. Now you have all of this racism basically just in different ways, which we never had before. Then it's getting shoved down people's throats with TikTok, like I said, all this other stuff, the news,
mm-hmm.
you know, because Big Pharma's behind that, politics are
That's
behind
right.
that, so on and so forth. They pick and choose what they show. You know, somebody's got to pay the bills. I see how it goes
now. Who is, I always say.
I stay on this, Charlie, because I think your academy is so important.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean look, so I'm this is my strike zone, so yeah.
I think I asked this the last time one of the guests we had on. Who is, you've seen the movie The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, who's the puppet master?
Who is the man behind the curtain?
You guess first, guess.
You know, but I could say, you know, you hear the name George Soros a lot.
He's part of it. He's a financier of it.
Like Bill Clinton, you hear these names. Who's this cult behind it? I always wonder that. There's
I say
few.
Gates or Obama or Gates and Obama from the guys I've talked to.
Gates is involved. Obama's involved. It's not a singular person. It is definitely a cabal. I mean, we could identify many of them. Mark Elias is involved. Mackenzie Bezos is involved. To a lesser extent, Laureen Powell Jobs. But it's – I think it's a little bit misleading to say that it's an individual conductor. I think they take turns. But they certainly want the same thing. And here's what they want. They think America's a problem. They think self-government is a problem. They think this whole promise of the founding is outdated. And this is not a new idea. Woodrow Wilson believed this. John Dewey believed this 100 years ago. The kind of new left that has been in power the last 100 years believed this. But you pointed something out, which is very important. There's layers behind the layer that expose other philosophical cancers in our society. The pharmaceutical companies are involved in a lot of this.
Yeah.
And make no mistake, the social contagion of trans is a profit center for the mm-hmm. pharmaceutical companies.
So they're all for it.
Well, think about it. They get yeah. to chop off the kids' parts.
Yep.
They get to administer them antidepressants for the rest of their life. Benzodiazepines, Zoloft.
Opiates.
Xanax. Yeah. yeah. All sorts of different SSRIs, serotonin disruptors.
And then think 20 years from now when there's a million problems, boom, you have to go back in.
That's right. So that's an annuity for the pharmaceutical companies. Not to mention, so the rough estimates that it's about $1 million per kid per year of pharmaceutical profits if everyone they're able to chop off their parts, yep. right?
Pfizer's like, sign me up. That's, we'll just go pay the $20 billion in a year and a half again.
That's right. But we must recognize that the if you were to say, okay, George Soros gets off the chessboard. Just another person would take its part, right? But Soros is definitely one of the top people because he's so forceful and he's so ideological. Gates has a separate view than Soros, but they're partners, and I could tell you the difference, right? So Gates is the kind of the chief cleric, if you will, of the religion of scientism,
mm-hmm.
right? That we must worship science. And their view of science is different than what we believe science can be. And we could talk about that. Soros is – he uses the religion of anti-racism. But if Soros is very well published. You can read everything he believes. There's really no mystery here. He believes America's a mistake. He believes in a borderless society. He believes in a global one-world government. He has made billions of dollars off of currency collapses. And he believes the police is the problem. He comes from an ideological worldview that the West is a project that is doomed for failure, and I'm going to accelerate that failure. Huh. Bill Gates has a little bit separate view, but they're partners. Bill Gates, so science as we used to know it was a beautiful thing. It was an inquiry into the natural world, right? Sir Francis Bacon came up with the scientific method. Sir Isaac Newton came up with, you know, the three laws of Newtonian physics that we all obviously operate in our world today. These people were largely Christian. They believed that there was a God. They were not him, that we are not him, and they want to inquire the natural world. That was the tradition up until the 1800s, early 1900s, where something changed. Instead of looking into the natural world to seek to know, to seek to wonder, to seek to understand, the new science, the new left, the scientism, they seek to change nature. They seek to change the order of the cosmos. That's behind the trans movement. Is that we are actually going to change the chromosomal makeup itself. We're going to use human will and exert our human will over the designed.
Now, does them sealing all of Tesla's stuff play into that as well?
Tesla?
Yeah, like the real Tesla. You know, all
Nikola Tesla. Yeah. Well, potentially, yeah. I mean, I think there's some misinformation. I think Edison actually was pretty cool, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, there is a pretty substantial theory that Nikola Tesla had a plan to power the world, and that it very well might have been covered up.
And then against what they wanted.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, again,
I'm just like trying to connect the dots.
It's speculation. Like, yeah. I mean, Nikola Tesla, being a Serb, I grew up with Serbs, so I have a soft spot for Tesla. There's kind of like a mythological quality to Tesla.
Yeah.
In the sense of larger than life, Elon believes a lot of it. Could be true. But if you really believe that these people are sinister, and he had a low cost, basically free way to power the world,
then he would run away from it.
Yeah, well, these people are far more evil than we could ever imagine.
Well, it looks, I mean, why else would you seal it? Because as you said, it goes all the way back, and we talk about Soros and Gates, even though we saw Gates on the name with the whole COVID thing that started in 2009.
Yep.
And that was with, you know, the top guys. That's just crazy. But there's so many layers under them. They're just like the spokesman of it.
Yes. I mean, again, they kind of operate with their own kind of hive consciousness. So that's really important to remember. But Gates especially.
He seems like the worst.
Yeah. And he's pumped a lot of money into this. But it's an ideological rot. And he's just a manifestation of that ideological rot, which is I'm trying to change nature. I'm trying to change what God has designed. Now, let me be very clear. We believe we can improve it. But we do not seek to redesign.
Yeah.
We seek to improve. And so one of the premises behind the mRNA gene-altering shot that they call the vaccine is we're going to change your DNA.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, Dr. Malone was in here for 4 hours, and he said, do not take the shot. I made the mRNA.
Yes.
And then, he left to Japan to go try to find a way to kind of counter it. He's coming back, thinking through.
I'm a big Dr. Malone fan.
He's a great guy. Great guy. And has a very good sense of humor. But I always say this, and you'll know better than me. A vaccinologist like him does not go on a podcast unless there's really something wrong.
Correct.
A guy like Peter McCullough, who I'm really good buddies with,
he's
does
great.
Not come on a podcast unless there's something really wrong. They stay in their labs and do what they do. So when you see that kind of guy coming out to hear Rogan, Fox, everywhere, there's something really, really wrong. But they push this down you, booster one, booster two, booster three, when the guy who invented the mRNA is saying, the odds of you dying from this are very high. It may say heart attack, stroke, so on and so forth.
Blood. Yeah.
Which leads me to go to tab four, which is – what you're also doing is the guerrilla tactics. Now, explain to whatever, whatever. I love it. You
Thank
know,
you.
The guerrilla tactics reporting. I mean, Turning Point USA is doing everything.
We're on the front lines,
yeah,
literally.
Yeah, people got to watch. I don't know how you got away with YouTube, which I'm going to get to in a minute.
Yeah, well, we have a good YouTube presence.
Yeah, you do. So tell us all about this, because
this is
cool.
A really
so we get
fun,
some real news, maybe?
Yeah, it's a real fun project. So we have a great team, Savannah Hernandez and Drew Hernandez. They're not related, but they both are in the same project. I learned from – so Drew Hernandez is one of the reasons why Kyle Rittenhouse is not in jail.
Oh, really?
He testified at the Rittenhouse trial because he was one of the people that took the footage.
Oh, that's right.
That exonerated him.
That exonerated – yep.
So he amongst three other people did this, right? So Drew Hernandez is one of the people in the middle of the night that took the footage.
Hmm.
And I got to know Drew. He lived in Phoenix, and I was quickly drawn to the belief that if we do not have more people in the streets capturing the truth, we're going to constantly be fed what the media wants us to believe. So it just basically started with a very simple premise. Public displays of anarchy and chaos, we need to be capturing everything that's happening there.
From
beginning to end.
Not just the clip that they want you to see.
Hours and hours and hours of footage, right? And so we started Frontlines as a way to be literally on the front lines to capture what is happening. From the Roe versus Wade stuff, we were there and we had the most viral footage, to them trying to storm the Phoenix Capitol, to some of the BLM stuff we've seen recently, to the Antifa stuff in Georgia. And so we're not doing what Veritas, when James used to be there, what James O'Keefe, forget Veritas, what James O'Keefe you know, used to do. We're not there. Instead, we're doing something that is far more simple, which is we're going to be in the streets capturing these big, high-profile events, whether it be Trans Day of Vengeance, we were there, the Detransitioner riot in Sacramento. On almost every day, we have motivated guerrilla journalists that are simply doing the work of being on the front lines and giving millions of people the truth of what's actually happening. And we think that's really helpful and really important to capture the essence of what's actually happening and to educate the population on it.
I think that's so awesome. So say even if you're an atheist or you're a Democrat and you went to January 6th to do whatever you wanted.
This is a great example. We didn't have enough reporters there.
Right. And we've had, what, four or five of the guys in that have been indicted? And
yeah.
Every one of them had the same story. The feds said, go in.
Yeah, I know, but it's a story.
It's a story, right?
And I believe them.
And I do, too. But this is why you're so needed with
this.
That's right. Because you have it from begin, like, if
the
you
whole
had
360, and people had phones that day, but it was scattery. It's still unclear. It's a little bit cloudy. It's clumsy. You know, they were distracted. So the truth will set you free. That is the operating statement, the mission statement of Frontlines. The truth will set you free.
That's awesome.
And so again, James O'Keefe does his thing, which he does the best at. We're going to let him keep doing that. This is different. This is high risk stuff, by the way.
Yeah.
Our journalists are put in danger. Savannah Hernandez. And then we'll do a second thing, which is we'll actually ask questions of the participants. So we do the kind of kinetic stuff we capture, right? Flashbang grenades, people getting punched in the face. But then we'll actually try to get a picture of who's attending. How do they feel? And those go viral as well.
And then you ask, obviously, the reporters risking their lives out
Correct.
There. You know, questions of what's going on and not say, hey, what do you think about that bomb went off? You have 10 seconds. We have a hard cut.
No, that's right. Exactly. And the media is so dishonest. And so if it wasn't for our Frontlines project, the riot, and when they were trying to come into my speech at University of California, Davis with weapons, never would have been publicized.
Never.
And so this was an amazing little thing that not little, but it was a little in the news cycle. It took a couple days up where I visited University of California, Davis, and they tried to burn down the entire campus. And Antifa was there. They assaulted a police officer, all based on a lie, by the way. And we can get into that story if you want to. But the chancellor lied about me and defamed me and slandered me. But we had our reporters there and they were embedded and we captured them smashing windows. And even some of the left-wing bloggers were like, how did they get such good footage of this?
See, now, when you hear that, yes. Now you know you're making a difference.
We know we're making a difference.
Right.
And by the way, they're going to try to prevent and dox our people. That's fine. We have the front lines reporters. We have Kaylin, Savannah, and Drew. They're courageous. And we got more, by the way. And it's really simple. We're not here. We're just going to capture it. We're going to watch. I think it's a huge missing part of the conservative movement right now.
I think it's just huge overall. And this is when I saw this, I said, this is it.
Thank you.
Because the other stuff, you know, you can go to the colleges. That always helps.
It's critical.
It's critical. But this is more critical, I think.
Yes. Well, and remember, sorry to interrupt, but
sure.
Drew Hernandez, Kyle Rittenhouse would be in jail if it wasn't for Drew Hernandez.
Right. It starts there.
So that's proof that this type of journalism can save lives.
And people want to see what really happened.
Yes.
And as they start to see, even you just said, the Democrat, they know you're conservative as can be, but they're like, how did he get that footage?
That's
so now it turns into, we want to see the action, right?
Yep.
They forget, oh, conservative. And as time goes on, you see more and more real stuff versus the news. And I think personally, other than a catastrophic incident like a 9/11 or something major, I don't see how anything changes, but this I could see.
So a couple of things, too. Our hope and our desire is that through capturing all this footage, we can make it less likely for the other side to do a Fedsurrection.
Yeah, you can counter.
Meaning that they don't know if they're ever on film or not. And that's a cool thing, right?
Yeah.
And so, look, we believe the truth will set you free. I'm so proud of the team at Frontlines. They have unbelievable courage, and I believe courage is the greatest of all the virtues. Without courage, you do not have a society.
Agreed.
And there's a lot of great reporters out there. There's a lot of people out there. There's also a lot of bloggers who kind of just write about what's happening. That's not what this is. A lot of payoffs. A lot of pay for play. Nobody gets rich doing this. They're taking red-eye flights, you know, flying coach, you know, landing, grabbing their gear, dressing in all black, and staying in – kind of trying to stay in the shadows to capture what's happening so the rest of the world can see the next police firebombing training center that we saw in Antifa, right? That's the work they're doing. I believe it's moral and good for the country.
See, I think this could change the 2024. This could change it because now you have proof. This is something I really, truly
think
could change more than anything
else.
We're
a 501c3, so that project doesn't aim to impact elections. But
You got
to
be careful.
Yeah. We live in a Soviet country, so I have to be very clear about organizational purpose.
Yeah.
We do have a 501c4 that we can talk about, too. All we're trying to do here is educate.
Yeah. And all I'm saying is...
You can say whatever you want, but I just got to...
I think that this type of
We live in East Germany.
Yeah,
remember,
I know. Yeah. We do.
I got to be very clear about tax code purposes.
I hear you. I know. Believe me. I know. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for something.
I know. So we just educate.
Yeah. We just... I think this type of education...
Thank you. We'll enlighten
Tommy's
people,
opinion,
right? We'll enlighten people towards proper action.
I really think it will. And then go to the next one, your YouTube.
Yeah.
Now, I'm so impressed with this.
Oh, thank you.
Because I got shit with YouTube when the whole COVID thing.
Yep.
You know, Roger Stone, we had to bleep him out. We had to mount before the code was running, the voice.
Yeah.
Roger was killing me. But how were you able to maintain your channel? Did you have to be more careful on YouTube?
We get flags, and I have a contrarian belief. We have a big Rumble presence, by the way, too. I encourage everyone watching to download the Rumble app. I'm a huge Rumble believer, but I want to occupy every space of where people can be persuaded. And YouTube has become totalitarian.
It has.
But there's still a lot you can say, a lot. And there's a lot of minds you can still change, a lot. And so Lech Walesa, who helped bring down the Soviet Union, met with a bunch of dissidents in the 1980s. And there was one dissident who was escaped from jail, or I can't remember the circumstances, and he was bragging to Lech Walesa about how he did an act of defiance against the Soviet Union that landed him in prison. And Lech Walesa said, "I don't think you're a hero. We have enough martyrs." He said, "You need to do prudent action. Not act as if the rules are right, but try to win over as many hearts and minds within the totalitarian parameters to point towards liberation."
Mm-hmm.
And so I say that there's some people, for example, that will intentionally defy YouTube's rules and then they'll complain that they get banned. I think that's silly. I don't think that helps anybody. Now, that's not to say the rules are good. They are a tyrannical totalitarian company. Let me be very clear. But we're careful about what we put up there. But now that we have 917,000 subscribers, and if you go to the about, I think we have 270 million views, and this is just our channel, the Turning Point USA channel. If you go all the way to the right,
where it says,
I can't remember. Maybe
hopefully after this, you're at a million.
It's at 217 million, maybe 266 million views, right? Not bad, right? And
not bad at all.
If you go to our shorts, it's a lot, but we do live streams every day. We have to be careful. We understand that.
It's 12 to 3 every day, right?
Yeah, 12 to 3 is our radio program and our live stream. Again, some of these views are modest compared to other channels. Our shorts are some of the best.
You're throwing a million of them. I mean, you have, 1.9 million or 1.9. You almost have 2,000 videos.
Yes, that's
Charlie.
Right.
It's not like you got 239.
Yes.
You got a lot of videos.
And again, like some of these are modest views by YouTube standards, right? But what we have really surged on YouTube in the last couple of months for a couple of reasons. If you go to shorts, you'll see, it's
shorts.
Right next to videos.
Right next to videos.
Yeah.
Shorts. Yep.
Yeah. So you'll see. I mean,
scroll through there.
Yeah. Some of these are kind of campus interactions, campus dialogues. You'll see that, these are turning hearts and minds. These are persuading people. So we fully acknowledge YouTube is totalitarian, but we know the rules.
Look at that transition regret. That one took off.
Oh, that's not even. This is, by the way, this is all suppressed. Go down
a little
bit more.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to tell you.
Yeah. Just look. If you go down just like 2 weeks ago, look what we were getting, right?
Yeah.
908, 1.2, 2.3. Then somebody put on the thumb on the scale. So we play this stupid game with YouTube all the time.
Me too. You'll see mine.
But I don't think it's a good thing to try to get banned.
No, I don't think it's a good thing.
Some people say, "Oh, Charlie, why do you use it at all?"
No.
Because you know why? There's a 15-year-old right now in Tampa, Florida, that might stumble across my video and have his total worldview rocked. That's why we stay on YouTube.
Might save his life.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so it's a daily battle. We have a great team.
I see that. Like, I'll put one up. That's what I was going to say. Whatever numbers you see on here, I would guarantee you it's probably three times
that.
Because I've watched before this whole Spotify thing, I watched. And especially now, I'll see it and it will be up. and then the censors must kick in, or mm-hmm. somebody reviews it, and then it goes down, and then I, you know, you email them or you file a thing, which you never hear back, and then suddenly it's back. But then I look at everything else, and nothing else has changed.
You got to constantly joust, right? And you know, working, we have a whole team that works with YouTube support. Again, I don't like the set of circumstances. I'm going all in on Rumble. Let me say that again. I want to live where Rumble is more popular than YouTube, and they can be. They're a multi-billion-dollar company now. I encourage everyone to have Rumble channels. Our Rumble traffic is more than our YouTube traffic. We have more subscribers on Rumble, more daily views, more streams, legit viewers, legit comments, legit supporters. But the Rumble is definitely more the base, more of the converted, right, than the people we're trying to convert.
Spotify's going to buy it.
Going to buy Rumble?
Yeah, they just bought Patreon. I think they're going to buy Rumble, man.
I don't know if they – well, that would be interesting. Yeah, that –
Now, speaking of which, why do you think, you know, because you're always killing it on Apple.
Thank you.
Do you think Apple and Spotify, other than their little blue thing, why do you think those are just the big ones I'm thinking of? They stayed more away from the censoring, and
they do.
They let the free speech go. But why, though? Why do you think they
did? Well, I'll talk
to
Apple first. Mm-hmm. They're just not a content company. And so I've talked to people in Apple. They don't really care.
That's a great point.
They're a hardware company.
Oh.
They have like 12 people that work in the podcast division, and they're all kind of like civil libertarian types, free speech types. And they don't, I mean, unless it's blatant, like unless they get a ton of complaints and somebody is doing something so insane, then they might censor it. But there's some pretty strong content on there that hasn't been touched.
There is, yeah.
Right? Now, they censored Alex Jones. That's bad. But that was part of a coordinated effort that we should learn from. So I'm not going to defend Apple. But I've never had an episode on Apple striked or removed. And I've done over 2,900 podcasts on Apple over the last 4 years.
Go to the next time.
Yeah, and we have one of the top – we have the top five conservative podcasts on all of Apple.
Always.
Yeah, just consistently. Yeah, we're top 20 in all news usually, top 15, but out of conservative.
You put a pile out.
Yeah, we do three a day. We are the highest output –
and still producing. Hitting the tops.
Yeah, and we're – yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That just shows how good your content is.
Well,
and
praise God.
Out.
Yeah, we have 39,000 reviews, which has taken a lot of work to get there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think Ben is number one with like 100,000 something, then Shapiro, and then I think we're number three. The reviews really tell you a lot. But again, it vacillates. Walsh is ascendant. God bless him. I love Matt Walsh. He's beating us in downloads right now. So we're probably four or five on some days in the conservative, sometimes seven, sometimes two. Depends on our topic, depends on our guests. But look, 4 years ago, our producer Andrew and I, we started this podcast and we had a vision and we said, hey, you know, podcasting is the future. Let's go all in. And we used to do one once a week, and then COVID happened and I don't sit still well. So then we went every day. And then we said, what if we turn that into a radio program? So then we also do 140 radio stations every day. And then we're also now on Real America's Voice, which is a fabulous station, television station. So we're kind of the only show that does radio, TV, podcasting, live stream every day. And so we're very blessed.
It's really, and at the rate that you grew. Now, you know, we always talk about it now. Now everybody gets rewarded for everything. Everybody has to be equal. Right? You know, everybody gets the trophy, this, that, the other. So, you know, somebody may be listening to this, like, what did you do that at, you know, 28, you're on Fox Business?
29. Getting too old for this stuff.
And in high school, you were doing the thing in high school where you actually made a move with the cookies. That's
a
funny story.
Right.
You got to tell that.
It's a wild story.
But how did you, you know, maybe that's where it kind of starts, but how did you get so successful so quick? You're at the 2016 campaign. I mean, you're doing major things. 30 in Forbes. I mean, buddy, that's a little stuff.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Lord has blessed me significantly, and I'm just an instrument for his will, and I don't say that lightly. We have a great team, and things really fell into place. But there's nothing like a decade-long overnight success story. So people, you know, I get some critics, and they say, oh, Charlie, you know, you kind of fell in and you haven't done anything. Look, in the last 10 years, I've
haven't done anything.
Well, I get a lot of critics, but I've traveled 2,930 days in the last decade. I'm a million mile club in every commercial airline, United, Delta, and American. I've flown 1.8 million miles with American.
But you haven't done anything.
Yeah, but people might say that's glamorous. Travel will wear you down. Yep. And so I was everywhere. At any time, speaking, raising money, and not to mention, you know, Turning Point has a $70 million budget now, and we have 350 employees. And so,
but initially, what did you do? You saw that the you wanted limited government.
And, I loved the Constitution. That was always my sense, and it still is.
The actual Constitution that we're supposed to go by.
The promise of the founders has remained my North Star.
So you decide to start Turning Point. So where do you go from there to get it to grow so quick?
Well, not going to college was my first key to success.
That was the first good move.
And I got a great mentor, may he rest in peace, Bill Montgomery. I was 18, he was 72, and he was a great mentor. And
sorry to hear that.
His legacy lives on, and he lived a full life, and he left something bigger than him, which is a beautiful thing. We should all desire to do that. Turning Point is his legacy, Bill Montgomery. Foster Fries, too, who passed away recently, was one of our first donors. But I've always had drive, and I've always had the ability to hustle. But if I had to kind of distill it, is that I just was relentless. And I was relentless. I was ridiculously honest with my failures of, you know, not doing well in meetings, not doing well in interviews, and seeking to improve. I'm massive on self-improvement. I'm a big believer in free will and agency, and that if you do small things every day, you could become something pretty excellent. And then I took every opportunity. But also, I have to make sure it's clear. I mean, if I were to thank the people that catapulted me, and this is one of the main reasons I support him in 2024, I would not be in the professional or organizational position I'm in if it wasn't for the generosity of President Trump. He was amazing to me. And I mean, people crap on him all the time. Whatever, I roll my eyes. And, you know, I had a donor recently. They said, why do you support him in 2024? I said, well, look, despite the fact he was a great president and that I think he'll win again, I have a personal debt to him and a loyalty because he was so magnanimous to me. I mean, here I am 24 years old. He's having me in the Oval Office. What president does that?
How did you even get that?
Right place, right call. Right place, right time. I met Don Jr. in the summer of 2016. I took 4 or 5 months off of running Turning Point USA, and I became his body man. And I traveled with Don. We did 100 days on the road.
Good for you, man.
Back when everyone thought there was no chance of Trump being president. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I wasn't even a Trump guy in the primary. I was a Cruz guy, but I quickly became a believer. Obviously.
How funny is that?
And I got Don diet Red Bulls and no zero calorie Red Bulls. I think it's the actual vocabulary and energy drinks. And I would take pictures and I was his body man, which is funny because I always tell people, I say, I know what it takes to be a good body man because I was one for 100 days. And, you know, you wake up before he does, you wait for him in the lobby. And it wasn't that official because there was no campaign. You know, they accused us of colluding with Russia. We couldn't collude to order a pizza, right?
Right, right.
We would confuse Cincinnati with Columbus with Cleveland all the time.
Yeah.
But it was the most fun, right? It was raw. It was organic. It was authentic. I convinced Don, and he'll tell you the story, you know, to go to college campuses, and he began to speak on campuses. We visited Michigan 15 times, which we end up winning. I predicted we'd win Michigan in September of 2020, and my prediction ended up being right. And so that basis of my friendship with Don is what then connected me with President Trump. And the family was amazing to me. The Trump family, they're fabulous. They're generous. They're committed patriots. Eric, Ivanka, Jared, Tiffany, Don, they're amazing. And so the story of Charlie Kirk would not exist without President Trump saying, you know what, I believe in you. And we did events at the White House. He would constantly promote us on social media, and he platformed us into a player. And with that came a cost because the media then wanted to take us out. So we had to deal with that. And it was a wild 4 years. But it gave us an opportunity to build an infrastructure, raise more money, use the notoriety for good.
Right.
And so whenever I tell the story, I just hope everyone understands that without President Trump, my own personal success, whatever that might be, and the success of the Turning Point machine now wouldn't be possible without President Trump.
And he didn't stab him in the back.
Me?
No, I'm saying you didn't stab him in the back.
I would
never. You could probably count. He probably can count on 5 fingers how many people haven't stabbed
him. No, I'm fiercely loyal to him. I'm also honest. I'll be honest with some mistakes I think he's made. I think the vaccine thing's a big mistake, and he's got to correct it. I think some of the personnel he's had around him.
That's why I say that, because you see all these people that were so buddy-buddy.
It drives
with him.
Me crazy, though.
Trump.
Here's, then, I mean,
how many people do you think stabbed him in his back that he gave chances that
dozens,
he gave up?
That's
why I said, you know,
well, thank
congratulations
you.
For not stabbing a friend in the back.
And I never will.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget you know, here I am, a kid that doesn't go to college, sitting in the outer oval with the president for an hour and a half, 2 hours, getting invited on Air Force One. I mean, yeah, I owe something to that man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go to war for him.
He and I talk about this.
Metaphorical war, media man.
Yeah. We call it old school because it's not like it
I'm going to go to the mat for Trump. Yeah, but I mean, that's a...
It's a loyalty thing.
It's a loyalty thing, but also I think he's a great president. I believe in his agenda, and I literally wrote the book MAGA Doctrine, but I hope people understand this is a good man. This is a man that has helped create movements bigger than himself.
Well, you didn't see any war problems. You didn't see Putin making any moves. No. You didn't see North Korea shooting missiles whenever they wanted, whenever they felt like it.
No, and I mean, and here's the thing is that I tell people about Trump all the time, and I've had a great opportunity to spend a lot of time with him. Is that I hear nothing but the negatives. But do we ever talk about the virtues of Trump?
That's what I say too.
Right? Okay. If you're intellectually honest about any being that is larger than life, okay, can you with an equal footing say, okay, yeah, he's a narcissist, all that. I don't think he is, but egomaniacal, I hear all of it. Can you also say that he's relentless and he's patriotic?
Drive.
That he loves this, yes, and that he believes in other people, and he's creative, and he's funny, and he's endearing, and that he's got more energy than any single human being I've ever come across.
Yeah.
And I'm a high energy guy, and he wears me out. And I mean, I'm like a 3 hour guy, and he's like a freaking beast. He's got this like supernatural life force. And I mean, you sit with him at dinner, he's just like, and then Lindsey Graham said this, and Chuck Schumer this, and like, and he's just like pointing out women there, and he's like this and that. It's like,
I think it's amazing that, I don't know if it's out yet, but the book where he's going to show all the letters that all the people wrote to him.
And letters to Trump. Everyone should check it out.
All
of
a sudden, they talk all this shit on him. But I think the most fucked up part with it all is when, in any party, Democrat, Republican, when they go after kids and the family.
Yep.
Leave him alone. Like his son has nothing to do with him. You could hate him all you want. You could hate Hillary Clinton all you want. You could hate all these people all you want, but it's like leave the kids out of it. They have nothing to do with
I think I totally agree. And I mean, I was very close with Don during the whole Mueller Russia collusion. Remember they tried to put Don in prison.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, you know, he did nothing versus Hunter Biden. It's just insane. But you can, you know, being a father's hard. And as you well know, it takes work. President Trump raised some great kids. They are some of the best people that I've ever met. They're honest, they're ethical, they're loyal, and they're helpful to me and to the country. So anyway, I don't mean to riff too much on the Trump thing. I just think he gets such a negative rap. And as someone, I call him a friend. I'm all in.
And I just think anybody with a brain, I don't care what you're for, if you take away the he's not presidential and
results. That drives me nuts. You mean that the country was better or worse?
That's what I'm saying, right? Okay, you didn't like his jokes. Okay, well, I mean, I know me and him ran home to see the 6 o'clock. It was great. Okay, so you don't like the way he talks. Okay, well, look what he did. Look how the country was ran.
Look at how the world was.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say. So, get rid of this whole thing where, okay, he's not presidential. Look what he did versus whatever you want to call
it. So I think we need to – look, I think he's going to be the nominee. I'm also very close with Ron DeSantis, and I'm friends with Ron. And at this point, he's not going to be the nominee. Trump will be the nominee.
Yeah.
And we got to coalesce behind him, and we have to make the appropriate investments in Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin to win. And we can win.
Now, you're always at the top of Twitter. I think Trump is the only one that's ahead of you, right? As conservative, he's that huge on Twitter.
Yeah, I used to be kind of one of the – I was the third biggest Twitter account, according to Axios, most engaged, not biggest by followers, or fourth. You guys could get the citation. And then, like, went totally – and I got totally shadow banned for years. Now we're back, now that Elon owns Twitter. So we're back on top.
So what changes do you think – will expect, and does he have the source code yet? I know he had to wait like 6 months.
I have no idea. There's a lot of expectations Elon has set that have yet to come true. I'm a massive Elon Musk fan. I think the world of him. Our politics are not totally aligned. I love entrepreneurs. I love people that want to work relentlessly to push themselves and to create new things. I hate complainers, and Elon's not a complainer. So I'm just a massive Elon Musk fan. With that being said, he said that we're going to see stuff on Fauci that would put him in prison. We haven't seen that yet. We don't know about the source code. We don't know about the algorithms. Yeah, that's Twitter here.
It's unbelievable.
So, that's with Twitter kind of flatlining the last couple of years. We're finally back at it. So,
yeah,
I was like, literally the first pinned tweet – I was placed on Twitter's blacklist because that was part of the Twitter files.
Yeah.
Is they put a do not amplify tag on my
Let me get your opinion on this. So this is my opinion. I think Jack Dorsey.
I've met with him before.
Okay. Well, then you can give me.
No, I'm. Not please like tell me.
I don't think he meant for Twitter to go the way it went. I think maybe he meant for Twitter, like, one very restricted, one open, and then I think his board took over and just overpowered him. Then I saw him, Elon, and Jack kind of hanging out a lot, and I thought, okay, well, maybe Elon's going to have Jack run it the way he originally wanted to, or am I completely off?
No, you're right. So when I met with Jack, boy, in the summer 18 with Candace, I think that was about right. Fall of 18. He seemed like he was taken hostage by his own company. Hired up too fast, too many left-wing, University of California, Berkeley. Married. And he was just kind of a hostage of the revolutionaries. I actually liked Jack personally. I think he lied to me, even though I liked him, because he claimed there was no blacklist and there was a blacklist. We know that because of the Twitter files, where my account literally said, do not amplify. Because, look, I started using Twitter in, what, 2011? That's an early Twitter account, right? I remember where I was when I created it. It was a computer class in high school, and I kind of figured it out. I figured out how to go viral. And so we had literally one of the most powerful Twitter accounts on the planet. And Jack complimented me. He's like, wow, you've really figured this platform out. Tweet frequency, vernacular. I figured out how to really make things trend. And so my Twitter account was a direct threat to the regime. And so they had to shut me up. And so Jack probably was aware of that. And so that's a big disappointment. If I ever see him again, I'll ask him about it.
But he was probably also hands tied with the board and everybody else on him.
Or the FBI and the CDC told him to do it.
That's probably more
the CDC probably, because my Twitter account was really piercing some of the COVID lies early. And then the New York Times wrote a huge article. I was on the front page of the New York Times in April 2020 that said I'm a chief spreader of COVID misinformation. I guarantee you they used that article as a reason to not amplify me.
And I'm sure that went with everything else, Facebook. What do you think of Facebook?
It's a failing company. Instagram has been a good platform for us. We have 2.1 million followers on Instagram. Yeah. Zuckerberg, I've actually spoken with him a couple times about other issues, because I was complaining about stuff. Somebody connected us, and I haven't spoken to him in years. I'm really upset with what he did in the 2020 election. That $400 million for the Center for Technology and Civic Life, I basically severed all ties. I said, we're done.
See, now, do you think he even knew what he was doing?
Because I have no idea. My working hypothesis, and I want to be very clear, Facebook, out of all the social media companies, Facebook is probably not the easiest to work with, but they're not as tyrannical as Twitter was. YouTube is becoming worse. TikTok is a waste of time. They're awful. And we could talk about TikTok if you want.
I stopped on there.
What?
I stopped.
It's just terrible.
I haven't stopped on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm finding newfound
life
on Twitter, which I love. And I'm kind of a Twitter guy. I grew up on the platform.
Yeah.
So yeah, look, Instagram is a great platform for us, and we engage a ton of people and reach literally millions of people.
It's interesting how Instagram, like for me, Instagram allows everything to go pretty much, but Facebook for me does not, depending on who it is.
Same company, different protocols.
Yeah.
Instagram, they're a lot more laissez-faire. Facebook has become very, very hard for us to distribute. Actual Facebook, not Instagram. And so look, I think Zuckerberg was I think Zuckerberg was approached by somebody in 2020 with a threat, because Facebook was being investigated by the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, and it very well could have broke up the entire company. And knowing the way the left operates, what I believe happened is somebody came to him and said, wow, you know, it probably wasn't this blunt, but it was probably close. You know, that FTC investigation is really dangerous. You know, there's a big need for a $400 million cash infusion for private drop boxes in the battleground states. What do you think about that, Mark?
And he weighs out his options, and he's obsessed with his metaverse, remember.
Which is a failure so far. By the way, the tech sucks.
The tech sucks.
I don't know how, if I was, I actually thought the other day, if I was the CEO of Facebook, I don't know how I would turn that thing into a winner.
I don't know. I think he went too far with that.
Well, because he bought Oculus from Palmer Luckey.
Yeah.
And the tech is not that good. As far, people just, They use it here and there, but it hasn't caught on the way people thought it would. They thought it would be the new television, and it hasn't.
Well, remember, we thought we were going to put it on. We would be floor seats at the Lakers game, like perfectly.
But the tech is not that good.
It's not.
It's actually nicer to just watch it on TV.
Yeah, just get a nicer TV.
And also, there seems to be some tech skepticism setting in where people are like, yeah, I got enough tech. I got my phone. I got my watch. I'll just kind of watch the game on TV. I need some separation.
From goggles and everything.
Yeah,
else.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so, but also the kind of metaverse, it feels like Sims.
Yeah.
It doesn't even feel that tech. It doesn't, it's not that realistic. It's not that, I mean, I played Sims in like 2005.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
He's right.
I'm like, it hasn't advanced much in 17 years.
Next thing you know, we'll be playing Zelda again. I don't know if
Well, yeah,
that.
Or Age of Empires.
Yeah, Age of Empires.
Or, you know, RuneScape or whatever. You know, yeah. It's just not that high definition. And so you have a multi-billion dollar investment. And, you know, they have some, if you go to their stockholder, because I used to actually own stock in Facebook. I sold at the right time. The stock is down huge. If you actually read their reports, which I just, you know, do in my free time, they really think the metaverse is still the future. That's what they're telling their shareholders. They're investing a ton of money. I'm a skeptic.
I don't think so.
I think they might. What they're trying to do medically looks interesting as far as doctors could help other doctors in surgery rooms and operating rooms and actually be there. But I don't know how that's any different than just having a live camera. I'm not. And so I'm not a believer. I think Facebook's in big trouble. WhatsApp is not being used the same way it was. There's huge questions about the security of WhatsApp. Telegram is ascendant, right? And there's other messaging platforms. Facebook itself, actual Facebook, is just boomer book now, which is fine. But basically, it's only used by people over the age of 50. Nobody young uses it. And Instagram is in the battle of their life for TikTok, which is a nice segue if you want to talk about TikTok
for a
second. I'm not a fan of TikTok. That Restrict Act is one of the most dangerous things I've ever seen.
And explain to everybody what that is.
Yeah, so I think TikTok is digital fentanyl. Let me be very clear. I'm not a fan of TikTok. I don't use it. I mean, I have a lot of complaints about it. But the regime in D.C. is using the hatred of TikTok as basically an excuse to be able to ban any speech they do not like, to control the entire internet. So they passed. They've introduced this bill, the Restrict Act, which would create absolute Soviet tyranny on the internet. So Twitter, Rumble, Telegram, all because they have foreign partners, they could use this act to completely shut down those applications, which are used mainly by right-wing actors. You could see them try to do this.
And you know they can't wait to do that with Twitter.
Well, that's right. And so my current belief is that TikTok bad, the way DC operates, banning TikTok worse. And I say that really reluctantly because my gut instinct is ban TikTok, right? But I don't trust these people at all. I do not want to give them banning authority over my podcast. So do I have to live in a world where TikTok exists? Reluctantly, yes. If that means I can still operate with my podcast and Rumble and all these other channels. But understand, when you started to see TikTok CEOs testifying in front of Congress, who do you think is pushing that? The tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to YouTube, YouTube Shorts and Instagram Reels, YouTube and Instagram have Google and Facebook, let me be even more specific, have combined a very secret alliance that no one's talking about right now, where they have thousands of lobbyists, where they're trying to ban TikTok because it will help their company.
Right.
I get it. I'm not actually totally opposed to that. The problem is that Facebook and Google have a deeper plan. They want the government to ban future competitors. They, for example, Facebook would love to be able to ban Telegram because it would help WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Google would love to be able to ban Rumble because it will help YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Understand, the game that you're seeing is not the actual game. There's this whole other subterranean movement happening below the surface where it's like, oh yeah, CCP owns TikTok, therefore we must ban. But who's really pushing this and why? And what kind of power are we going to give them?
And then the government comes in and says, okay, well, YouTube, this is how we want things to go.
Yep.
Sorry, Google, which is a complete monopoly.
Yep.
Facebook, which is a complete monopoly. You have WhatsApp,
Instagram.
Here's
our new rules on disinformation.
Yeah, make sure you put those in right now. And then once they ban TikTok, Now they have the right to ban anybody that
and
they
so
want.
And so I think TikTok. I'm sorry.
Don't you see the same? And this is on the same set of lines there. Don't you see the same thing happening with the banks, that they want all these banks to fail so they have whether they're Bank of America, Wells Fargo, four major, whoever those are, four major, and then they can control that also.
How many car companies do we have? Three.
Three.
How many credit card? How many credit card companies do we have? Really, three.
Three.
Visa, MasterCard, American Express.
I couldn't believe Volkswagen made Bentley.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't believe Volkswagen made Lamborghini.
Well, those are German companies.
Yeah, yeah. I just couldn't believe.
Yeah, but we have three car companies. How many telecom companies do we have? Basically three. We have AT&T, Verizon, and I mean, T-Mobile's a German company, so that doesn't even count. What am I getting at here? We basically have only a couple companies in every major sector right now. How many direct-to-consumer home service companies do we have for like cleaning products? Basically two, Procter & Gamble and Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, they just have umbrella on top of umbrella.
Well, oh yeah, and you don't even notice it because they have sub-brands that they've purchased. How many soft drink companies do we have? Two.
Two.
Pepsi Cola and Coca-Cola. Even Topo Chico's now been bought by Coca-Cola. They just keep on buying and they keep on buying. What I'm getting at
One more that's funny is PayPal and eBay.
Yeah.
They acted as if they separated.
Payment processors.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is crazy.
So basically, and this is one, I'm a big free market guy, but we're actually seeing the hyper corporatization of the country where you're getting three or four select politician favored companies that control every sector, every single sector. They want the, and next is banking. Yep. So America was free because we had community banks. The more we've had hyper Wall Street culture with the repeal of Glass-Steagall, never should have happened, which was the convergence of investment banks and commercial banks. We've seen this whole kind of new Leviathan set in. And so they want to get rid of community banks. And the same way they want to try to only have a couple social media companies, a couple banks, a couple soft drink companies. Why do they only want a couple? This is fascism. They always warn against fascism. This is fascism.
I want to go through these two, but I want to go back to TikTok. So.
Sure.
They ban TikTok, then they can ban everything.
So there's a bad idea. We should not ban TikTok.
We should not. You've changed my mind.
I used to be where you were, right? Yeah. Because I was like, TikTok's awful. It's terrible.
They're downloading everything on my phone. But you let them do that, then they can do everything.
Yeah, look, and I was, man, 2 months ago, I was right where you are. Then I saw, I wasn't naive, but I'm still in the belief, if I had a magic wand and we had a functioning government and a prudent regulatory body, ban it in a second. We have none of those things.
And then you look and you say to yourself also, when I was seeing that, I was saying, okay, well, the reason why you want to ban TikTok is because Instagram, Facebook, blah, 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 they're all doing the same thing. They're just in the United States. So you want to just pick TikTok as another distraction, diversion from really what's happening.
Yes.
But then when you throw on that layer of, okay, if we ban TikTok, even though it's in China, because that's the narrative.
That's the current excuse.
Which is why we need your gorillas out there.
Yeah, Telegram is founded by a Russian. They'll ban Telegram in a second.
They'll ban that.
Rumble was founded in Canada. Twitter is owned by Saudi shareholders.
They will just go right down the list.
And these platforms that we use to literally get the word out, to challenge tyranny, are next. TikTok is a means to the end. It is a prerequisite for mass regime censorship. The ban of TikTok.
I never thought I would say, just like I will never buy Bitcoin, but I never thought I would say, I hope they do not ban TikTok. So, TikTok, stay alive.
There's a way to do it, which is to demand a private American company purchases it.
Well, that's what Trump was trying to do.
That's right. Yeah, try to have, and it's called like Project Texas or something, where you have some American companies buy it and onshore all the data, where therefore you have at least some form of a precedent that if you are owned by a bad foreign actor, you have to onshore the asset, and there you cannot then ban Rumble, Telegram, Twitter. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, AOC, would love nothing more than to be able to get rid of Twitter, Rumble, and Telegram. The American right lives on Twitter, Rumble, and Telegram right now. It would destroy our movement.
I'm impressed with Rumble. I thought they were going to be one, you know, kind of like the one that pops up. And
yeah, I mean, all disclosures, I own stock in Rumble. I'm not telling you to buy. I push it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But no, I'm a big Rumble believer, and I'm a bigger believer in what they're trying to do than even what they've done. But they had an amazing earnings call recently, and they're not turning a profit yet, but you know, they've doubled their revenue, and
think who they're going up against. And it's not just what they're going up against, the suppression, you know.
I mean, they have A-list blue chip talent, though. They got Russell Brand.
Yeah.
They got Steven Crowder.
You're seeing one by one go over there.
Yep. And we have more subs on Rumble than we do YouTube. And so
how nuts is that?
It's crazy. No, our live stream.
That just shows you how throttled it is.
Oh, yeah. And so, look, I think that the market opportunity for Rumble is extraordinary. And it's going to take some work and take some time. But they've built the company correctly where they have their own servers. They've basically gone to a place where they're uncancelable. The issue is the advertising networks. But that's small. They can figure that out.
Now, to the banks. So the credit unions, mm-hmm. You know, my mom always went to a credit
union. They're trying to obliterate
them.
If she
even went to a bank, she didn't trust banks. You know, Italian women don't trust banks at all.
Yeah, they're smart.
Yeah, they're smart. But what she did do is she went to credit unions. So is a credit union an umbrella of, say, one of the three major ones, which we don't know?
I'm not sure. From what I understand, though, the credit union has to be FDIC insured. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I think it falls under federal regulation. But at least from my experience, credit unions can be branches of a bank or a side project of a bank. They want to get rid of the idea of local deposits. They want to try to create three big banks, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, and the third, we don't know what it's going to be. Probably Bank of America will be the third, right?
Yeah, because they don't let anybody get a bank account. I shouldn't say this, but my old driver was an illegal immigrant trying to become an illegal. His kid got sick, you know, the whole nine story. So we tried to get him in. He had an appointment. He had no social, no anything, and had a checking account at Bank of America. Just walked in and walked out. I couldn't believe it. I almost fell over. So, wow.
Yeah, and they but BOA wants it that way because they want the increased deposits. And so
I bring that up because, you know, like I think the border, it has to be for votes.
So oh, it's totally
when you
votes.
Start thinking about the third, that popped in my head because sure.
Yeah, but it's more
walk
than
through
votes,
the border.
Too.
Get the votes, do whatever we
it's
say.
For labor, and it's also for an increased consumer base. And so the oligarchs that run America, there's like four or five of them, they benefit tremendously from an increased consumer base using dollar bills, specifically Walmart and Amazon. So, for example, there's something called remittances, where if you cross the border, you work here as a maid, you send money back, you remit money back to Mexico, Nicaragua, El Salvador. It's like a $50 billion business. The number one place where remittances are sent is the money table, the money exchange table at Walmart.
Wow.
And that's just one example of thousands I could come up with, right? Not to mention low-wage labor for the hotel industry in Texas and Arizona, you know, the low-wage labor for the construction development agency industry in Arizona where I live is a big thing. But also the more people exchanging in dollar bills in the low-wage kind of consumer goods area, it's really good for Amazon, really good for Walmart, really bad for middle-class America. It's really bad for long-term wages. But yeah, and then also the Democrats want it for votes.
You know, Target's involved in that too. Joven was showing us.
I believe it.
And I was like, Target, but who knows what else they own that we just don't know that they own, or I don't know.
You know what's crazy? Speaking of voting on that topic, I lived in Florida now for 12 years, okay? Moved from Pennsylvania. My brother-in-law lives in the same house we used to live in Pennsylvania. He texted me yesterday with a picture. I got a jury summons. Like, I haven't lived in Pennsylvania in 12 years. He goes, I also got last month a voter registration card for you in Pennsylvania. I'm like, I haven't lived in that state for 12 years. So isn't that kind of fucked up? So there's a voter registration for me in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
So now I have to call there and figure that out, right? Because if not, you know someone's going to vote under my name.
And you have your voter card here, too.
Correct.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Well there's to go to
and that's
to be a heads up of what they're going to try to do.
That they're already beginning.
Yep.
Now, do you see a one world currency at some point?
Do I see it? I think that's their plan. I mean, CBDC is the next plan, central bank digital currency. That's their plan in the short and the immediate term. And the American dollar and the pound are the only two currencies the last 100 years that have not been reset. I think they're going to try to get us towards a great reset. Crypto and blockchain technology could be a solution, decentralized currency. That's why I think there's a big push to try to outlaw it and hyper-regulate blockchain technology.
What do you think of Bitcoin?
What do I think of it as an investment?
Yeah, as an investment.
I don't recommend investment advice to people, but I do own Bitcoin.
You
and
do.
I've made a bunch of money on crypto.
You gotta be very smart.
Yeah, but I bought at the right time and sold at the right time. But I
did that.
I'm not an investor. I never, because people actually listen to my advice and I never want them to lose money. But I mean, I bought at the right time and I sold at the right time. So, and then I bought more at the right time. So, but I'm a big believer in the technology behind cryptocurrency.
The blockchain.
Correct.
Right.
Bitcoin is just as valuable as we believe it to be, similar to the dollar. But I am a believer in the philosophy of decentralized blockchain technology that is transparent, that is public, that has a ledger that you can check and you can see all the transactions. I think that builds faith in the currency itself. And the dollar is the opposite. The dollar is basically vapor. We don't know how many dollar bills are out there. We don't know who has them. We don't know why they're who makes these decisions. Bitcoin is the opposite. But it has plenty of problems. The problem with Bitcoin is that the price is way too volatile, right? Which is an indictment of the dollar. I think Bitcoin's like $26,000 today or $27,000, about right? 26? I bought it the right time. It's funny. I didn't buy early enough. Someone tried to get me to buy Bitcoin. It was $100 a coin.
My friend bought it at 77. Next thing I knew,
still holds.
No, he sold it. He's got, you know, a $17 million house. Hasn't worked a day in his life.
28.
Is that 28? I was about right. Yeah, so it's going up, actually. So I don't give investment advice. If you own Bitcoin, great. You could lose a lot of money on it. I also invest in crypto hedges, too, because I think that I've made a fair amount of money on that, too. But again, not an investment guy. You guys should seek people that are far more into this than I am. But I am a believer in the philosophy, for sure.
And now we've seen China align with Russia,
yes.
Serbia, somebody else. I just saw it the other day. Mm-hmm. Really, and what's crazy is this is why, again, your reporting is so important.
Thank
because
you.
I had to dig for this because like I have to go on Brave to find some real news and go through some pages to see what's going on because to me it was just a matter of time before they started their alignment. Now they're trying to go to the yen. Right?
Is that
the yuan?
Y U A N. Yeah, the Chinese yuan. That's okay. Yeah, I mean, you could pronounce it either way. It's all the same thing. So yeah, I mean, look, the dollar is the world's reserve currency still. But if you look at the percentage of transactions that involve America as the world reserve currency, 10 years ago it was 70 to 75%. Now it's below 60%. So we're really lucky to live in America. We should be thankful. The world order that was put in post World War II, the kind of neoliberal order, has its problems, but we've become super rich in this country because we are the world's reserve currency. It kind of is our secret weapon, if you will, the secret sauce. Now, they're going to have trouble getting off the dollar as the world reserve currency for a lot of reasons. There are countries that the two major countries that backstop us is Germany and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And the only benefit of our hyper-involvement in this stupid war in eastern Ukraine is that Germany's not going to get off the dollar anytime soon as their world reserve currency. The euro is going to be backed by the dollar. That's really good for our wealth. Japan, the same way. So Japan and Germany are two foes in World War II, and Korea. Those three countries are very stable, industrious, that have legitimately valuable companies, and that's a good thing for us. The question is, what is Brazil and what is India going to do? India should stay on the dollar, but they're tricksters, those guys. Yeah. I'll tell you what, you can't trust them. They're playing footsie with all sorts of different people. They should hate China. India should be a close partner.
They should, because they make quality products. They do. Like they should be partnering with us.
India should become the new China.
Yeah.
And they have massive poverty that could use low-wage labor.
Right.
And that's a separate issue. Brazil, unfortunately, with the election of this communist, Lula, and getting rid of Bolsonaro. But Brazil's a messed up country. They only have like $1 trillion GDP. You could fact check me. I think it's like $1.2 trillion GDP. The bulls on Brazil have been wrong the last 20 years. Everyone's like, Brazil is the new China. It just hasn't happened. It's an unbelievably corrupt country. It's natural resource dependent.
So I was just going to say, they're corrupt, and what do they have?
They have the Amazon, and they have natural resources, but they are not an entrepreneurial, industrious
That's
people.
Right. They tried to cut part of the Amazon down.
Yes.
Graham Hancock
whereas Germany, Japan, and Korea are incredibly industrious people. Germany especially. I can't tell you how powerful the German economy is. Most Americans don't know this. From Bayer to not just Porsche or Volkswagen, from just the little widgets we use in so many of our devices, they have a massive chemical infrastructure. They are a very wealthy country. So that's a good thing. That's working. And but the entire European project is supported by Germany, right? And that's good because I'm actually cheering for the dollar as the world reserve currency.
Yeah.
I don't want that to cease. The big question is, why the heck are we allowing Saudi Arabia to do this, right? I'm no fan of Saudi Arabia, but the petrodollar, basically, with the House of Saud, we built this whole project back in the 50s or 60s when we realized we're going to need a lot of oil. We realized that Americans are driving more. We realized that we need fossil fuel based. And Saudi Arabia and America came to kind of an agreement, and we came up with OPEC, right?
Right.
Which is the oil, basically the oil producing countries. And we said the dollar is going to be the reserve of that. Saudi Arabia is trying to mess all that up. And Russia is the one that is hyper involved in all this. So the way it should be is that we shouldn't be involved in the war of Eastern Ukraine, right? We should be trying to broker peace. We should try to get to Russia to have not grow close to China. And the obligation number one of the American ruling class should be to protect the dollar as the world reserve currency. Now, you might say, well, Charlie, what does the world reserve currency mean? Here's the best way I can explain it. It's that if you acknowledge the dollar as the world reserve currency, you have to change your home currency to dollars in order to trade, which therefore makes our currency more valuable.
Yeah, right.
It's very simple, right? Which therefore makes our assets more valuable. More people trade in dollars. More people come to America. More people use American companies. It is kind of an unfair advantage that we have built into our economy. And we're about to mess it up. And we will be catastrophically poor if the world stops using the dollar. But here, it will go down, but then it will flatline because of what I just mentioned. Europe and most of Asia will keep on using the dollar. Africa doesn't have a lot of wealth. God bless them, but they're trying to figure themselves out, right? So the question is, what will the Middle East do? And that could make us pretty poor in the short term.
So correct me if I'm wrong. We're sending trillions of dollars overall, whether you say, you know, with artillery, whatever, to Ukraine.
Not trillions, but
I mean in total.
$200 billion.
Okay, $200 billion.
But we're on pace.
We're on a good pace, okay? To a country that NATO declined 7-8 times.
Correct.
For nuke stuff, for kid stuff, all kinds of nutty stuff. We're giving it to them. In my opinion, that's getting laundered back, which is why this guy lives in a $30 million house when he makes $400K a year.
And Zelensky has a massive mansion.
That is a nice mansion.
I know that for a fact. I know where it is, actually.
Yeah.
In the hills of Florence.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
And while we're doing that, aren't we buying gas or oil from Russia?
That's a good question. I don't know if we suspended that or not.
But we were, though, right?
We were for quite some time, yes.
So we're sending one to fight the other.
Yes.
And then buying. Who's the puppet master behind this guy? Because it's not him.
Biden?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the entire military-industrial complex regime in D.C. run by Northrop Grumman, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and...
Boeing.
Yeah, I mean, Boeing makes a ton of money off of these wars, right?
Yep,
a ton.
Yeah,
they,
right.
They make the planes that we're sending over there, and Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Raytheon is the other one. Those are the big defense contractors. But yeah, I mean, look, it's less about who makes a bunch of money, and it's more about why are we involved in this in the first place? And it's a series of bad mistakes and kind of a comedy of errors that all kind of comes back to a false premise that Russia is the great evil. I'm not a fan of Vladimir Putin. I don't think very highly of him at all. I actually think he's a scumbag, to be honest. But I don't think we should be funding a proxy war against him. I think that's a big mistake. I think peace could have been settled very early in this. I think we also poked the Russian bear, and no one wants
Charlie,
to talk about
agree
it.
Charlie, do you agree with me? Like, in this particular instance, Putin, they've been doing this forever.
Yes. And,
like, what? He's trying to leave him alone.
Well, yeah. No,
or make the peace.
Make the peace. Yes, exactly right. We should not be sending weapons. We should not be sending artillery. We should not be sending money. And Zelensky is a bad person. That needs to be repeated. He is not Churchill. He is not a saint. So you have two bad actors going to war with one another. The tragedy is the refugees and the women and the children. It's terrible. No one likes war. War is the worst thing human beings do. And so we should try to end that. And the consequence is Russia, after we slap on all these sanctions, Russia said, okay, fine, I'm going to go grow close to your great enemy, China,
mm-hmm.
which has happened. And we did that. Our American government did that.
And meanwhile, Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, China's like, hey, you need another $10 trillion? Here you go. Interest free. Here you go.
Yeah. And again, China has their own
forever.
China has their own domestic currency problems, which we could exploit. We could collapse the Chinese economy in 100 days.
And they know it.
Yes. And so they're trying to backstop their economy. And the issue, so a lot of people say, oh, Charlie, if we stop trading with China, it would crash our economy. It would be hard to get some products. The biggest problem with China is that they own our elites. That's the biggest problem, is they've captured our powerful people, is whether it be the head of the National Basketball Association, head of the banking cartel, the head of Hollywood. They make so much money off of the Chinese Communist Party personally. And so, look, it's a mess. I think Trump could solve this thing in an afternoon. We have Joe Biden and his family are purchased by the Chinese Communist Party. They want us distracted by Russia. And you have kind of this octogenarian elite, people in their 80s in D.C., that think that Russia is this massive threat to America. They're not. Russia should be a soft ally in the fight against the Chinese Communist Party. That's where Trump had them. Trump had them in a place where they did not invade eastern Ukraine. They were able to keep Crimea. There was some little antagonism here or there, but Trump and Putin talked regularly. They had the Helsinki summit in the summer of 2018, and we were in a good place. We were in a good spot, and China was really worried, and we messed it all up.
And now they're smiling from they got the Kool-Aid smile now.
Yeah, look, and I want to be very clear. A lot of that is kind of posturing. The Chinese economy is far weaker than they'll put on. These are tyrants and dictators. They lie. They have a lot of problems domestically in China. A lot of what you see is kind of a simulation. But China's going to go aggressive soon to try to distract from their domestic problems. They might try to go for Taiwan. Good luck. It's a tough island to take. It's 2,000 miles of straight cliff. And the Chinese Communist Party hasn't won a war in a long – I don't think they've ever won a war, let alone – I mean, they're not exactly – they don't have a strong, rich military tradition there. So the last time they really fought was us in the Korean War. So good luck.
If they did anything, they would probably be techie, right? Like hit their grid.
I think that's right. Like yeah, that. But I don't think we should underestimate the Chinese Communist Party. No. At the same time, they have an inferiority complex that is very mystical in China. And the Japanese could exploit that because the Japanese dominated them for decades recently. Anyway, that's a side note. The CCP, evil, awful, terrible. They got a lot of problems. With the proper president, we could collapse their country if we wanted to. And I think we should.
Who was telling us about the Chinese, that they have cops here with, they're from China. They're like undercover cops.
They have police stations in New York City.
And that's true.
They closed one of them, thankfully, because of
all
the exposure.
Really people in here from China.
Well, yes, Chinese Communist Party agents here to police Chinese citizens in America. It's so messed up. They closed one of the police stations, thankfully.
Yeah. Can you pull up tab 3 and then I know?
Sure. I got 10 minutes.
College scam. I have to get to it because I love it.
One of my favorite topics.
Yeah. So let's talk about that because, like I said, with Pat and many others, and I'm against it. You didn't go to college. I didn't go to college. And
sweet.
We're sitting across from each other. Tell us about the book.
Yeah,
it's so awesome.
It's a fun project. It's been probably one of my most successful things I've ever done. And people are buying it like crazy. If you guys want, you guys can check it out. Hey, you got 4.5 stars on Amazon. That's not bad. I actually haven't checked it in a while. And so I asked the question, why do we send our kids to college? And I believe it's a scam. And I believe we have way too many kids going to college. I think college is a place for some people, but not all people. That's considered a thought crime. And I think we need more welders and electricians and entrepreneurs. And then the way I go about the book is it's very, very well researched. It's very thoroughly developed, about 30 to 40 pages of footnotes at the end of the book. And I go through a 10-page indictment of the college industry as if I'm a prosecutor and college is on trial, because I wrote it persuasively because this is such a thought crime. It's so embedded in people's belief system.
Like you have to go to college.
I'm going after a sacred of sacred cow, right? That you do not need to go to college. It's actually overrated and it might be bad for you. And so I go right after it, and I make the contention, I think, rather thoroughly and comprehensively that college is bad for your soul, it's bad for your mind, it's bad for your wallet, it's bad for your future. And what would America look like if 90% of kids actually didn't go to college? And so I make that argument in the book.
And when you're writing this book, not all of it, just give me three things that shocked you, even knowing what you knew, that factually shocked you.
So
and this book is facts.
It's
not your opinion or...
No, I wrote it really soberly. I mean,
yeah.
I have even stronger opinions than what I articulate in the book, and I say that.
I assume that from watching and reading other things.
Yes.
But what were three things when writing that book that even shocked you?
So the first, I'll give you three numbers. The first of which is how many kids actually graduate from college. What do you think? What do you think the national graduation rate is? Enrollment to diploma.
What do you think, Rob?
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I don't know. 42%.
Yeah, you're not off. Well, so 42% drop out, so you're not wrong. So 59%. So okay. Think about that. 41 to 42% don't ever make it to graduation.
But still have a bill.
And they still have a bill, and they still have student debt. That alone. So if you and I go out for dinner, and I say, hey, this restaurant, there's a 41% chance you get food poisoning. You'd say, well, this place should be closed down. What kind of scam are they running here? Or, hey, there's a 41% chance your plane is going to be delayed.
You'd say, well, let's pick a new one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, by the way, that's probably true of most commercial air travel today. But anyway, the point is that...
It's another story, right?
Yeah, exactly. That no industry could survive that way, okay? The second one is about half of kids that end up graduating, 10 years after, end up getting jobs that do not require a college degree. So why did they go in the first place?
Because their mom or dad or...
Social pressure. And the third one is very interesting, which is I knew this existed. I knew it was there, but the numbers are so eye-popping, which is the endowments of these colleges. So an endowment is a tax-free vehicle that is invested by the college that matures over time. And so Harvard has a $55 billion endowment.
Ooh.
Yale, $40 billion. Stanford, $50 billion. University of Texas, UTIMCO, has a $48 billion endowment. So it was eye-opening to me, these hedge funds that have existed with a college attached.
That's am I missing something, or is that insanity?
No, it's insane.
A hedge fund attached to
a college
like that. Wow.
I mean, so when people read that, they say, what? And they're still charging $90,000 now a year to go to Harvard, all in. Recent study shows like $88,000 to $90,000 a year to go to Harvard. And so you have these massive buckets of money, and they're still charging tuition, and they're still going to the government for money, and they have $45 billion in assets.
Now, let me ask you this. When a college like that is involved with a hedge fund and that kind of money.
Well, I use that moniker as a hedge fund.
Right, right.
But yes.
How much influence then does that bring to the college?
Oh, I mean, it drives the college, right?
So it's just like, the news and everything else.
That's correct. So you have these huge buckets of money. You have these. So anyway, I think that's really eye-opening. By the way, this book is full of facts like that where you'll be like, I can't believe it. And my guarantee is this. If I have not persuaded you by the end of the book on at least some of these counts, I haven't done my job, right? And here's how I know the book is well-written. I only received one critical article in response, and it was some snarky professor. Usually when I write a book, and I've written several,
five, six, right?
Yeah, I get all these like really snarky pieces. This is a bulletproof book. I don't say that lightly. I don't say it braggadociously. It's very clear. I receive from some of our donors who used to be pro-college, they said, Charlie, I read the whole thing, and you're right. You make a really good argument.
The hedge fund threw me on my butt. I mean, that was just nuts.
$50 billion that they're sitting on. This is a college.
A college.
This is a place that you're supposed to go learn, not supposed to go get an RO. I mean, and they're still charging families tuition, and they're sitting on $50 billion.
Unbelievable.
It's good timing for this book because my son came to me yesterday and said, Dad, I don't think I'm going to college. And I looked at him. And it's that same mentality that you're talking about, but I looked at him. What do you mean? He's like, you don't have to go to college to be successful. This is my 16-year-old.
That means my job. So the maybe, fact that that's getting out the book, there maybe, is affirmation maybe, of my life work.
Maybe I'll have to show him that book.
Well, and so here's, I'm going to make it very clear. If you don't go to college, you must still hold yourself to a standard of excellence and the pursuit of being better. It's not a chance to escape responsibility. It's the opposite. It's a chance to lean into responsibility. I talk about that in the book, right? Is that some people say, well, Charlie, what are they supposed to do instead? And I come up, I have like 30 ideas what people could do instead of going to college.
Yeah, you're not saying sit at home and collect a check from the government.
Of course not.
You're saying,
you know me, right?
Yeah,
in fact, I think it's a chance to flourish.
Yeah.
I think it's a chance to become an entrepreneur or to go intern and go be mentored by somebody or to go travel, which I think really enriches somebody's soul and their worldview. So, yeah, I mean, just because they don't go to college, you can also just say, all right, well, then you get 6 months at home, then you got to find a job and pay rent. That's way better of an education for them than actually going to college. Because the problem with college, again, I talk about this in the book, is it's so removed from reality.
Yeah.
They're not paying bills. Every meal is provided for them, right? You have this awful hookup culture where they are completely detached from, I think, strong sexual ethics that actually make people happier and more joyful. So it's just the men especially get all messed up on their view of women and women get super depressed, right? And I don't buy into any of that. I think it's really damaging, actually, to society. And this, I think the data is showing that. And then they really don't go to class. And then they then over time, then they get filled with all these awful ideas.
And then they come out into the real world.
Yeah, and then they come into the real world and they have resentment. Resentment is the worst thing you could produce in a young person.
With a $200,000 debt.
And that's partially why they're resentful. Yeah. So I make the argument in the book, again, I think rather soberly, I could have went even harsher, that it's a scam. And scams should be closed and shut down and held accountable. And from my research, I'm one of the few people that's actually making that argument.
Do you think, real quick, I know you got much time left, do you think that they're pushing kids? You know, you see with the whole, we'll pay for your college tuition, we'll pay off the bills, the government's going to take care of it, that they're pushing kids to college still.
Yes.
They'll take care of it so they can indoctrinate them more.
Without a doubt. You get more of what you subsidize. And so as they subsidize student loan forgiveness, they're trying to tell young people, don't look at the price tab, we'll have some taxpayer pay for you on the back end.
Yeah, we got to brainwash
you. Yep. And we got to bring you through the ideological laundering.
And I think this is just good for anybody watching. You know, you've had shots taken at you because of your opinions and everything
else. All the time, whatever.
What do you do nowadays to not be the victim and not be bullied, to just keep pumping and pumping and pumping?
Yeah, I mean, my religion is very important to me. My belief in the divine drives me. The next book I might write, I have like three books I'm working on at once. I got to figure out which one I'm actually going to proceed with. But a book I will write in my life is, I believe that keeping the Sabbath is one of the most important things a human being can do. Having a day of rest, I think it's a gift from the Lord. And I think fully shutting down, turning off your phone, turning off all the technology for a 24-hour period would make America less depressed, less suicidal, less anxious. I do it. Friday night to Sunday morning, no phone, no TV, no news, just books, family, walking, food. That's it.
Amen.
And I believe it's a very simple, and what I love about it is that it's zero cost. Any American can do it at any time, right? One day of complete rest. The Bible shows us the beauty of that and the necessity of it. And we used to have it in our laws called blue laws. We got rid of them. I'm not even saying bring them back, but I think we can all agree that there's this collective hurriedness in our society right now. We're always like in a rush. We're kind of distracted. Real relationships are rare to find anymore. And so let's be intentional. And so for me, I have a day where I get to enjoy the beautiful things.
Not just work, this, that.
Yeah, and I love work.
Yeah.
But it makes the 6 days I can go even harder. I wake up earlier. I have more energy because I have a standing celebration of the Lord and what he did once a week. It's a cathedral in time for me.
Mm-hmm.
Friday night to Sunday morning.
That's great advice.
And so I would love to write the book, make the argument. People say, Charlie, how do we make people happier and have less murders and less crimes? If a majority of Americans, not even all people, majority of Americans did this, every metric would go in the right direction. I guarantee it. I believe God in the Ten Commandments gave us the Sabbath to make the other nine commandments possible. I think you have a better marriage if you honor the Sabbath. You tell the truth more. You honor God more. Less likely to steal, less likely to covet.
You have standards,
and you also then detach from the flow of modernity into a temporary place of really kind of ancient wisdom and beauty.
All right, Charlie, man. Thank you for your
time. God bless you. Thank you.
It was an honor. We'll have everything in the description.
Subscribe to the podcast, everybody. Take out your phone and subscribe. Thank you.
Get on YouTube, Rumble, Twitter.
Or Apple Podcast.
We'll have you everywhere. Thank you very much.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.